the form. I don't want to take the easy route and go Chet. And
I was going to say.
My guy, Kyle Bone, locked up. Chet had like 7 points on this and like, I don't know, maybe like 10 the other game. So like maybe I'm just a hater, bro.
Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2. I'm your host, KJ Allison. Here my boy and co-host, Naruto Perdomo. We're laughing, we had a little joke session before this, but we got a great episode for you guys today. But bro, we put some Final Four takes out last episode. Your shit smacked, mine not so much. But I just want to talk about the tournament a little bit, maybe the final game. You could take it wherever you want, but let's talk some March Madness.
Yeah, excuse the laughter. You made me just laugh. You're a funny guy, bro. But yeah, so Final Four, I mean, it was a great overall just NCAA tournament, you know, all levels, honestly, D3, D2, D1, like a great year for college basketball. You know, just a lot of, you know, conversation surrounding the sport. So it was really cool to see. And the Division I March Madness, bro, it was awesome. Like, it's always, you know, it's always great, like, you know, hang out with your teammates, watch NCAA tournament games, chill on the couch, you know what I'm saying, talk about college hoops, you know, analyze the game like that. That's what makes, you know, the NCAA tournament fun. And it's also like, you know, like seeing those guys compete at such a high level, like they're coming in every game with a lot of intensity. You know, every game is a game seven kind of atmosphere. And, you know, they're laying everything on the line at the end of the day in the tournament. So it's cool to see. And there's a lot of cool stories and, you know, cool moments in this year's NCAA tournament. And yeah, my pick almost finished it out. Houston kind of sold low key. It was crazy, bro. It was like watching the game. I was doing homework, honestly, during the game, but watching the game, like, it was kind of like, I don't want to say like surreal, but when Florida won, I'm like, bro, did they really just win?
Like, bro, that was the Duke game, though. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Like, it's weird because it's like, I felt like Houston had control of the game, bro, like for like 30 minutes. But like the last 10 minutes of the game, like Florida was just like creeping. And I think maybe if Houston had like maybe another minute on the clock, maybe they would have been able to, like, you know, get a good shot at the end. But it felt like by the time Florida was coming back, like, Houston looked like flustered and Florida had all the momentum. So
Walter Clayton started getting going towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
Florida wasn't even playing that good, but they just, like you said, they like kept chipping away, bro. And basketball is weird like that. Like, you can literally control the whole entire game, would come down to like the last 2 minutes, you'd be up double digits and then shit goes wrong. And then you on the wrong end of a historic night. So
yeah,
definitely how it goes sometimes.
I mean,
but bro, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, like, I think to your point about Florida didn't even play well, like, shit, they played well when they played well enough to win a national championship. But I definitely agree with you because, like, watching some of the bigs in the first half, bro, like, they just were not. They were not like the kid Condon, I think.
Yeah.
Like he's good, bro. He's like, he's a good passer and stuff like that. But he was not as aggressive, I felt like, as he could have been in that first half. Like, second, I think the guy's name is like Haw or some shit like that. The big that got like a mullet. Yeah. He started being like way more aggressive in the second half, just like, you know, attacking the bigs and stuff because they were just trying to play Walter Clayton out top.
Yeah, bro. Just real quick, I was thinking about this. Like, big shout out to Todd Golden because I was impressed by what I was seeing. Just like his demeanor, his energy throughout the night last night. Because, like, when they were going on that run, I saw him plenty of times look to like the crowd and like, let's go. Like, we need y'all energy. Or what's his name? The China Lu, you know, I don't know how to pronounce last names, but when he got that tech, it was like a crucial tech. Like, what are you doing, bro? You guys are on a comeback. It's a national championship. And the next, like, he subbed him out, came over to the sideline. And he just kneeled next to him like, yo, what happened? China Lu explained, like, basically, I just lost my emotions. I slammed the ball. It's on me. Dapped him up. Like, you're good. Put him right back in, bro. And that's like, I don't know, that not many coaches, like, in a national championship, you might be on some nah, he's done for the rest of the game. He wasn't even playing good, so it's easy excuse to just sit him on the bench the rest of the game. He could have sold the season, but he trusted him. He didn't hold it against him, and I feel like that kind of – like that support system and that energy by Todd Golden kind of kept them in the game. Like, nah, we're okay. Like, the emotions are going to go up and down throughout tonight. Like, just stay level-headed. And then in the post-game, like, you could see Florida's connectedness. All their guys came in the huddle, like, screaming, yelling. It was a cool moment. Definitely a good national championship, bro.
Yeah, nah, that's a great point, bro. I mean, when they got the bench check, you know, for getting on the court, like, celebrating Florida, like, Todd Golden, like, I didn't see him yell at his bench. He was just, like, he was yelling at the ref, like, yo, like, we calling that right now? Like, come, like, y'all, you for real? Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? So he's got the support of his players. He got the player. It looks like he has his players back. He has all of his players backs. And one thing I respect about Todd Golden, he's kind of one of those dudes that kind of built himself from the ground up too. Like, he was a, you know, director of basketball ops at Columbia, bro, when Pearl was there.
He's not even 40 yet and just won a natty.
Yeah, see, like, that's like, he's bright future ahead for sure. Already shining, but
yeah, I mean, we talking a lot about March Madness, and we could kind of transition into today's episode. We got Luke Barrett on today's episode. Luke Barrett, really, like, an interesting guy, interesting story in general. So basically, he out of high school committed to a Division III school, and this is kind of crazy how life can just, like, change at a blink of an eye, and like, the trajectory of his career just changed dramatically because he committed to that D3 school, Pomona Pittsburgh, and then decommitted because of COVID, whatever reasons he explained in the episode. Went to walk on at St. Mary's, which is just a challenge in itself, taking a risk on yourself. And, you know, the benefits came to him after, bro, because now you're talking about Luke Barrett, a starter on one of the best teams in the West Coast Conference, playing in March Madness all 4 years of his college career, making big shots down the stretch, and, you know, a big game in a 7-10 matchup. Like, it was a really good conversation. I like my boy Luke Barrett, and he also has a bright future in basketball, but I want to hear your thoughts talking to bro.
Yeah, shout out Luke for getting on the podcast. Shout out my boy Kyle Jasper for connecting us. I mean, it was crazy how, like, hearing his story on the telecast, right? Like, it kind of reminded me of, like, Joel Palmer from last year. Like, you know, we heard Joe Palmer's story while they were playing Texas or something like that. And we're like, yo, we got to get this kid on the pod. And, you know, just like Joe, Luke's a great dude too, man. It was a great conversation. You know what I'm saying? Talking about his journey through basketball, I think, like, just he obviously, like, has played at a high level. So just the way he talks about the game, it was just a really interesting conversation. You know what I mean? Like, he was talking about how, like, he's coming in as a, you know, freshman, sophomore. He's like, bro, I feel like I really buckled down and commit myself to the grind. Like, I could be better than these dudes. You know what I mean? That takes a lot of confidence and, like, just trusting the work too. And I mean, he did it. Like, he literally did it. Like, he was a walk-on to starter at a, you know, 17-1 team in college basketball in conference. Like, that's hard to do at the Division I level. You know what I mean? Like, and he's a bucket, bro. Like, he's a bucket in my opinion. Like, maybe his stats are not, like that, but, like, watching his game, like, watching the film, like, he gets to it, bro. He's physical as hell. He crashes the rebounds. He can shoot it. So it was definitely a great conversation with bro, and I'm excited for the viewers to, like, hear his story because it should influence others too. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, just keep your head down and grind. Focus on your own journey, and, you know, it'll play out how it's supposed to.
Bro, you and I both say this a lot, but the work really always shows. Like, the people that's – just like you said, putting their head down, getting in the gym. That is no coincidence why those players are the ones that, you know, get the spotlight. But you said, like, his stats, bro, still averaged 10-6 on, like, not that high of a usage rate. So
yeah,
he's doing what he's got to do. But also, I wanted to talk about Coach Bennett real quick because he's also one of those coaches that just, like, keeps his head down, bro. You don't really hear him in interviews or him talking like, oh, I did this, this, and that. Because he could say that. He's a 6-time coach of the year in the conference. He's won plenty of games, made it to March Madness, I think, 12 times in his career already. And it's just like what Luke was telling us about what they're doing in practice, how they're scouting. Bro, you're like, this is a distinguished coach. Like, a lot of coaches kind of taking their foot off the gas, and when it comes to like discipline, high major guys or like high level guys, but he doesn't care who it is. He's going to keep his culture, and his consistency is just up there amongst the best, bro. And I feel like the WCC, it doesn't get a lot of credit just because I was telling you earlier, it's not that good of a conference. It's just Gonzaga and St. Mary's. But like Coach Bennett deserves more credit, in my opinion, bro.
I mean, you know, building on to your point, like, you're talking about creating culture. We had a conversation about, you know, overseas players coming to play Division I basketball, bro. You know what I mean? And, you know, a lot of those players, I'm guessing, are coming in. Maybe their head is not as high as, like, a player in the States who you have the recruiting system, the five-star system, mm-hmm. that have, you know, all these AAU coaches around them telling them they're good. You know what I mean? Where in Europe, you're coached a little bit differently. Yeah, you're playing pro from, like, a young age, but still, like, it's probably a little bit different. And he's just bringing in, like, high-character individuals like Luke to the program that's, you know, focused on the grind and just trying to be the best player that they can be. But definitely interested to see, you know, the reaction we get from just the conversation about overseas players coming to Division I playing basketball, because I do think that could be a trend for the future.
Yeah, no, it's a good show. And this is a really good episode. We don't want to keep the intro too long. Let's hear from Luke Barrett, really good player, and enjoy the episode. All right, we are here with our boy, Luke Barrett. How you doing today, bro?
Good, bro. How y'all doing?
Chilling, bro. Appreciate you getting on. What you been doing today?
I told KJ, I've been sleeping in the last couple weeks, just trying to rest after the season. And it's weird. I don't have much to do. Like, you've starting to now realize I'm not in my routine of having practice or something every day. So slept in, made a smoothie, and just got ready for this.
Bro, it's so crazy, like, how we're talking right now, because our day is, like, almost done. It's 4 o'clock, and then bro's day has just started. We on the opposite sides.
Yeah, but, I'm already known about that because of yesterday, bro. I called about 11:30. He was sleeping over at Cali.
but it was, like, 8. I got to call, like, 8:30 my time. I'm like, bro, you got to wait, like, another 2 hours for me. I was out in Cleveland for March Madness, bro, and I hated, like, how was it, like, watching, like, games when it starts at, like, 10:30, like, that, we were trying to, like, and we usually wake up game day, like, on a morning in the hotel, and, like, there's plenty of games on, there's, like, Big East games on, and there's just, like, nothing on, so what is that like?
Bro, it's so crazy to think that that's how y'all look at it, when that's just been normal for me, I guess, but I feel like I like it like that, like, you get everything out the way throughout the day, and then late at night, then it's just time to, like, chill, watch the games. But that's so crazy, you, like, waking up to games being on.
Yeah, I guess it's just whatever you grew up with.
No, yeah. What you be doing in Cali, though? Like, you got any favorite hobbies or anything you do in Cali?
Yeah, I try to be outside. I like, especially when the season ends, I like to go get a couple of golf rounds in. There's a good amount of places out here, but that's one thing. I would love to say I, like, go out and go to the beaches and surf and stuff, but I can't surf or anything. But just being outside. And, like, right when we got back from Cleveland, it was, like, the two hottest days in the last, like, 3 months. So we went to the pool both days. And, yeah, it's the weather's nice out here, I'll be honest.
Yo, you're tempting me to move to Cali, like, soon after college, bro.
it's not bad, bro.
But, yeah, I want to talk about March Madness a little bit, bro, especially, like, we could talk about the tournament as a whole later on, but I want to talk about, like, SMC, St. Mary's run this year. You guys beat Vanderbilt. That was a gritty game. We was talking. It wasn't the prettiest game, but you guys got it done. You hit a few big shots towards the end. So I'm just curious, like, about this year's run. We could start with that, but then also, like, some of your favorite memories, because y'all made 4 straight NCAA tournament appearances. So talk to me about that.
Yeah, man. It's always emotional. It's always a pretty cool experience. But I'll say this year was different in the fact that, like, yeah, it was our fourth year there. So kind of like that excitement and that, like, the coolness of, like, just seeing the March Madness logos and being out there, it kind of wears off, which was good for us. I think we're very locked in. And, like, and I mean, I was telling you earlier, but, like, I think every year you feel like you're poised for a big run, especially when we are five seeds three of the times and a seven seed this year. And, I mean, that means you're probably, like, ranked in the top 25 and you feel like you could be anyone in the country. So even though that didn't happen, it's a very exciting feeling to have that belief within the locker room and have that focus. And yeah, I mean, you gotta throw your best pitches out there. And we definitely didn't in the first half in Vanderbilt. We were gritty enough to get that win and then just didn't play our best game against Alabama. But it was still, like, that Vanderbilt game is still one of the most, like, emotional, like, just roller coasters. And, like, I think the next 2 hours after the game, I was, like, feeling like I was going to pass out. And, like, it was just, like, a lot. Like, it was – because you had deja vu of, like, the game last year we lost in the first round, and you're like, oh, my God, this is not happening again. Like, and then to pull it out was – it's just different. Like, you can't – until you experience it, like, the type of adrenaline and the type of stakes that are on those games is
– bro, because when you hit the three, the crowd went crazy. So I know you was feeling great after that.
Yeah, I try to keep my composure, bro. You saw, like, I try to keep a stone face, but I can't help but hold up the three sometimes. But no, that was like, I mean, that was one of those where you actually do realize, like, how big of a shot that. Like, usually it's like, I've hit a couple this year with, like, 5 minutes left, 4 minutes left, but, like, I knew there was, like, 2 minutes left and, like, wide open, like, everyone in the building's looking at that. So it was definitely like, and there's a clip of my family just like. My family and all my cousins, like, reacting to that and just, like, pushing each other and, like just going crazy. So, like, I'll definitely always be able to have that moment of hitting a big shot in March. It was cool.
Nice. Bro, I always love how, like, when players score, they pan over to the families and, like, the families are going crazy. Yeah. And I heard St. Mary's isn't too far from where you grew up too. So you had family coming to the games and stuff. So that's a dope feeling, bro, honestly.
Yeah, it's about 20 minutes, like, 20 minutes from our group. You just gotta go drive through the tunnel, and so yeah, I had tons of people. And even just, like, even this year especially, just people from my hometown wouldn't even, like, ask for tickets or anything. They would just kind of show up, and, like, my parents would be like, oh yeah, this person was here, this person was here. So it's been one of the most special parts for sure.
That's smooth, bro. Yeah, I was curious about, like, I want to talk about the WCC, but specifically to start, like, this Gonzaga versus St. Mary's debate that's kind of rising of, you know, who's the best team in that conference, because it's been, you know, back and forth the past, I want to say, like, 7 years. But just talk about, like, that rivalry, how it is playing against them, knowing, like, our two teams are probably the best two teams in the WCC this year, and we're going to, like, make March Madness. So just talk about, like, that competitive tension.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, I think we've played, I don't know how many years, but at least, like, 10, 20 years. I think it's the last 20 years we've played. That matchup's been the most played matchup in college basketball because we're always seeing each other in the conference tournament championship. So, like, I think you start out, and, I mean, they were the top dogs when we came in. They were, like, number one in the country most years when my freshman year and even sophomore year. But we ended up being able to – it was a rivalry, but – like, it's one of those where, like, no, we got to, like, switch this to where it's not, like, we're not storming the court when we beat them. We stormed the court the first year we beat them. And then I think we rattled off, like, five of the last seven or something like that. So, and won the regular season championship three straight years. So, it was super, like, super rewarding to try to be a part of, like, a team that took that rivalry while we were here. But I would say, like, by the end of it, especially, like, after we lost that championship game this year, it was the most, like, I'd ever been. I'm kind of a hater. I'm like, I don't like any of the other teams we play against. Like, I don't like being buddy-buddy or anything. But, like, we definitely have a very high level of mutual respect now that we're always seeing each other, and we, like, we're part of one of the best matchups in college basketball. So, like, we're going out to the club in Vegas after the game, even after we lost, and we're saying what's up to them in the section. Like, it's not like it's kind of got to the point of, like, not like love, but, like, respect. And even with, like, the Mark Few's just like, hey, let's go see each other in the Final Four. Like, we're good. Like, it's just, And that was especially like the last time we played against him. I'm like, damn, I'm kind of sad I don't get to play against these guys again. Like, if we could go like check up in like open gym in the summer, like I would do that, because it's just like you get to know those guys so well. We don't even have to like scout. Like, I could run the scout for our team. Like, we don't have to scout. Like, we know exactly what they're gonna do. So it was super fun.
Dude, that's what makes like college basketball like what it is. Like, you know, I don't know how much like KJ like told you about like our backgrounds. We both play basketball right now, D3, right? And we're both in the same conference. And now, like, I'm done hooping, but I know I'm gonna miss those matchups against Alfred or Nazareth College, who's our rival, Fisher, where we're running through their plays over and over again, bro. And we know that Alfred's gonna bring their best shot. We know Naz is gonna bring their best shot, and that's the part that you really gotta love about college hoops, bro.
For sure.
No, yeah, and it's like, at first, you're a freshman year, you probably walk in and like, yo, I'm on the court with legends right now. Like, Mark Few is on the other side. And then you guys get that win, you storm the court, you feel all good. But then it's like, nah, this is our competition now. Like, we're on the same level as them. So I feel like that's the transition that St. Mary's kind of had in the past, like, decade or so, about, like, we're on that stage. And I'm kind of curious, like, Coach Bennett's been the head of that this whole time. He's one of the best coaches in the country, in my opinion. 6 times WCC Coach of the Year, which is crazy. But he's also led you guys to 12 trips to the tournament. Like I said, 4 in a row. Crazy stat right here. Hasn't finished below third in the WCC since 2014, bro. That's impressive. But just talk about, like, his style, your relationship with him, and, like, what makes it, like, his style so successful in the WCC.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing is, like, that, like, his record, like, we just have so much confidence going to play Pepperdine or going to play Portland. Like, we've done it so many times, and he's done it so many times, so he knows, like, what to say and how to get us prepared for each one of those games and each one of those teams. But I think, like, I mean, they know what we're going to do. They know we're trying to, like, especially while I've been here, like, we're just trying to grind the game down and control the pace of the game, rebound and defend. But we just do that better than – we do that better than anyone in our conference, and, like, nobody else is really trying to play like that. Like, they're trying to go get their numbers and do whatever, but, like, we just take pride in that. And I think we scout guys really well, and I think we pay more attention to, like, scout than anybody else. So I think it's just, like, yeah, attention to detail and then, like, the focus that we have for every game. Like, he's making us believe, like, oh, no, we could really lose this game to Pacific. Like, they're good. Like, when we haven't lost to Pacific the whole time I've been here, we haven't lost to some of these things. Like, but he's like, no, like, they got this guy. Like, and then by the time the game rolls around, you're like, shit, bro, we got that. Like, you got that healthy fear of losing that game. So, he just knows the right buttons to push for sure.
I mean, it's that, like, you know, they talk about it with Coach Pitino, like, some of his players, they're just like, they just hate losing. You know what I mean? Like, that Pitino kind of instills that mindset in them, like, they would do anything else but lose this game, no matter who it is. So definitely could see, you know, when a coach can bring that out of you, it definitely shows that they're special, honestly. I mean, and it also shows up on the court. I mean, for the last 2 years, you guys have been ranked in the top percentage, I think, of, like, offensive rebound percentage in the country. So, like, that shows that you guys have a lot of focus and, like, really just a lot of motor on the court. And we're going to talk about that more, but it just, you know, Coach Bennett definitely adds to you guys for sure.
Yeah.
So I want to bring it back to the NCAA tournament, bro. And I want to just kind of give you the background how, you know, your story came to us, really. So we were watching the NCAA tournament game. Like, I was watching with some of my teammates here at Utica, and I had gotten to the game late. Like, we were all watching in our living room, and, like, usually, like, my teammates, they like to, like, joke with me a lot. Like, anytime, like, you know, college basketball players on, like, oh, you got to interview this guy, whatever. But, you know, when I walked in, they were like, yo, you got to interview this kid on St. Mary's, bro. They said that he committed D3 or something like that. And at first I had my guard up, but then, you know, I looked up, you know, who you were and stuff like that, your roster. And I seen my boy Kyle Jasper followed you, and he goes to Pomona Pitzer right now. So I was like, oh, this could be interesting. And basically with the telecast, what they said was, is that you originally committed to Pomona Pitzer, which is a D3 school in California competing in the SCIAC conference. But then towards the end of your senior year, you received the preferred walk-on offer at St. Mary's. So just fill in the gaps from that story and kind of walk us through your journey.
Yeah. I was committed the whole way to, I mean, I was trying to get some D1 looks, but I didn't, have anything. I was talking to St. Mary's a little bit because I met Randy when I was like 5 or 6. I played against his kids, and then one of the assistants, Justin Joyner, who's not Michigan, he was like a family friend, and he was my trainer from like 5th grade all the way through 8th grade, and coached me and my brother, so knew him super well. And so I committed to Pomona Pitzer, was fully going to go there. And then COVID happened, D3 season shut down. We weren't even going to be able to like go to school or anything. We were just going to have to be taking online classes, and like they were sending us like workout plans and everything. I'm like, dude, this is not like, I mean, I was going to do it, but I was like, this is not good, bro. This is not good. And we're paying like freaking boatload of money to go to take online school for that year. So like, I think most of us were like, all right, we're going to defer this year and then come back the next year. So basically just like you're taking a gap year, but it doesn't change anything. Like you're just going to come in as a freshman the next year. And then I don't know what the timeline like exactly, but like pretty soon after I made that decision, Justin called me, and it was like midsummer. Like it was, the team was already there. The St. Mary's team was already like on campus working out. The new freshmen were already there, but he called me and said, like, you could come walk on here. And it was at first just like, come try it out for a year. If you don't like it, like you can go back to Pomona Pitzer. But I think it'd be a good opportunity for you. And so I started definitely seriously considering it. But yeah, it was tough to like make that phone call to Coach Cat at Pomona Pitzer. And then I literally had one, I didn't even go on a visit. I had one call with Randy Bennett, like a couple 5-minute call, and he, so then I went over there like August or so, like, yeah, maybe mid August, and had a couple weeks of summer, and then was just right into it. And, I think within like 2 weeks, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna stay here for sure. Like, it's just like, one, because the team and the culture was so elite, and like, I couldn't imagine leaving those guys, but also like, I felt like, all right, I can, not right now, but like I can end up playing here. If I just buy in fully and like throw myself in this program, I'm gonna be able to work my way up. And pretty much what they said at the start is what happened. Like they're like, you're gonna redshirt freshman year, but sophomore year, maybe you could try to play a little bit. Junior year, you should be able to play. And then that's what happened. Like sophomore year, I played in a couple big games, but was mostly just playing in garbage time, and then got a scholarship after that year, and then played in the rotation like 10 minutes a game my junior year, and then went from there. So it was a pretty lucky thing that happened, and I'm grateful that I ended up here. I think it was the best spot in the country for a walk-on to be. I have friends that are walk-ons at like Purdue and places like that, and they just never really get the chance. So I mean, even after I got on the scholarship, they didn't treat me like different than I was when I was walking. Like they always treated me like a scholarship player in a way. Like they always treated me like they coached me as hard as anybody else. They expected as much out of me. So it was the best decision I ever made.
Bro, that is super tough. And you said that it's like luck. I wouldn't picture that as luck, bro. You bet on yourself and you worked for it. So it's not really like, I mean, maybe you're saying you could have ended up at a school like Purdue and it not worked out like that, but You put the chips on Luke Barrett and became rich from that, bro. So respect to you. And I want to kind of hear about like your walk-on experience, because I mean, not many voices or like spaces talk about what it's like being a walk-on college basketball player. But you're saying like you're being coached just as hard as someone that's their school is paid for. You got to work just as hard, but like you're just not receiving all the benefits from being like a scholarship player, and you're not playing at that. So just talk about like that, and then what your mindset was, how you kept grounded, worked through it all to, you know, get a scholarship.
Yeah. I would say I could talk about like how mine was pretty unique, because I came in and there was like three other guys at my position in my class. So like it was if they're going to take a walk on, like my position wasn't what they needed, but it was pretty loaded on my position. And then there was also there's a starter, and then there was four of us like trying to fight for that backup three man minutes. And I'd say early on, like I was definitely on the bottom of the totem pole, and like I'd have to fight for minutes in practice and like, because there's at the end of the day, you still are the walk on. But I just had to kind of slowly like outwork those guys, and I could see like I can kind of remember like points where I was like, all right, I'm better than this dude, like I'm gonna beat this guy out, and like I'm gonna outwork him. And I think one of them transferred after. I don't think anybody transferred. Yeah, two of them transferred after sophomore year, and then one of them like quit like and went back to Estonia like right before my third year. But basically, I just took pride in like, no, I'm beating these guys out, and like they're leaving for reasons like outside of me too. But like partly like I'm beating them out, and like and I'm kind of getting rid of those guys and then taking that position. So that was like the most like. That was a cool part of my journey, and I think it like really helped me like just drive me like looking at like those matchups, and like we're friends, but like when we're in like open gym together, I'm like I'm counting his buckets too, and like I'm trying to beat these guys every day in my approach and like the way I work. So yeah, like you, I think less more and more I was seen as like less of a walk on, and like now I can play. And yeah, I don't even remember what the question was, bro. I just got like carried away with that.
Dude, I fuck with that answer, bro.
Bro said he was counting bucks.
Dude, I feel like a lot of it with college hoops is like it's like attrition, bro. It's like chopping away at it. You know what I mean? Like it's just over time. Who can kind of stay the longest? Who can kind of put in the most time, effort, you know what I mean? And that's kind of your story, bro. You obviously took your opportunity and ran with it, like you said.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, bro. And I'm kind of curious too, like about this culture too with St. Mary's, right? Like I said, like we're gonna talk more about like the statistical side of it, but like watching St. Mary's play, like you guys are all like hard nosed, like just great basketball players, bro. Like you guys are all like tall, strong, you know what I mean? So I just want to hear about this culture that you guys have there, and kind of, you know, Coach Bennett's like development, getting you guys to like the players you are today.
Yeah, I think he gets us to play good basketball, like just not unselfish and smart and disciplined basketball. And like if you watch our open gyms, I'm like coming off on balls and I'm like shooting like pull up threes and stuff. Like, I mean, I shot like one off the dribble jumper all year this year. Like I'm like, you know, like you kind of everybody has sacrifices they kind of have to make, and I think we start at the very baseline with like the fundamentals, and one of the first things we do is like a defensive practice where we just like, nah, this hand's here, your head's right on, like when you're closing out, your head's on this guy on the inside shoulder, your foot is like slightly above this foot, like all those little like details that maybe not everybody does. I mean, I don't know what everybody does, but I know with that and like shooting and all footwork, like the post guys do so much, like the post guys are always good in a program, and they're doing post progression like footwork every day and like just drilling it out. So like I think we repeat a lot of the same drills, like we're doing the same, the first hour of practice is the same every day, the individual workouts in the summer are the exact same pretty much every day. So like we're getting what's important, and then we're just drilling it out to where some of the most like satisfying possessions of basketball I've played is where you're on defense and like you just not, you got five guys out there that have been in the program, and then you're not thinking, you're just kind of in that flow state, and you're doing your job. And then you, maybe one guy gets blown by, this guy rotates. Like, you know, those possessions where it's just like everyone's on a string and everyone's just doing their job without thinking. I think that's what our development looks like. It's defensively and offensively. Like offensively, we had a lot of possessions this year where we use all 30 seconds of the shot clock, but there's no panic. It's just like, all right, that on ball didn't work, kick it out. Penetrate, kick, next on ball. Like it's just like we're training ourselves to be programmed to just play the right style of basketball and play smart.
I mean, yeah, you guys are getting to 2 feet, making that, you know, skip pass, whatever it may be, making that extra one too for, you know, a teammate that's hot.
You say so, get to 2 feet, it gives me like PTSD, bro, from because like, I like to, like that's like one of the most common, like, and I like to, I mean, I'm not saying I like to play off 1 foot, but like early on, I would definitely just like drive into my head down and just like go with whatever. But like, I mean, the amount of times I heard get to 2 feet is like crazy. Like it's, but it works.
Bro, watch. I mean, watching your film, like obviously, like you could shoot it, right? But like, I feel like I see you getting to like the Barclays a little bit too. Like when a driver, like someone cuts you off, you like putting your, you're putting them on your back, you know what I mean, and like surveying the floor, being physical with them in the post up, trying to, you know, use your size and your frame to, you know, get an advantage. So I mean, that's just the mark of like a poised basketball player, honestly, like a, you know, well coached player. I had one question about like a development thing. So do your coaches like practice like offensive rebounding? Like, because that's like a big part, I feel like, of your game. And like just the, like, I feel like watching St. Mary's play, like the bigs, you guys are crashing number one, but the bigs, like Saxon, he's always in the right spot. Like he's like hitting it out or some shit like that. Like, do you guys practice that or no? Is it all just motor and hard work?
Bro, honestly, I wish we did. Like, I've heard like Houston puts the bubble on the rim and then they just throw it up and play it and just rebound for 10 minutes. And I'm telling you, like, this year I asked to do that drill like many times, but we never did it. But I would say like they just enforce it so much and they show it on film. Like Saxon is not like he can't like catch lobs or like anything, but like he just like wedges you in at the right time and like uses his broad ass shoulders to get position. And it's just like, it's experience and like seeing it on film and seeing what works and then just doing your job every time. So it's like, they're not practicing it, but like they got two coaches that are just designated to yell like crash at you and like box out like there. And then if you don't crash as a 3, 4, 5, or if you miss a box out, you're running down and back every time in practice, like every time you do that in practice. So it's just like incredibly enforced. And then, it's just motor. Like, it's just like, we haven't always been that, but since I've been here and since Mitch has been here, like that's kind of became our identity. And we try to be number one in the country in that. Like, we're trying to do that. We do that in practice every day and we do that in games. So it's just something we like take pride in.
Nah, bro, you could definitely see why Coach Bennett is so good, bro. It's like, you're not hearing these stories from basically any other coach in the country. So for him to instill like that discipline and that, like, if you don't crash, you're running in practice, that's definitely going to implement onto the court. So I respect that. But I was curious, you keep mentioning like Mitch, and before we got on air, you was talking about like how you, Mitch, and Augustus were like the only senior leadership on the, not leadership, but like senior guys on the team. So just talk about like y'all three relationship coming in together and, you know, how that's developed over time.
Yeah, so I came in the same class with Mitch, and we've been living together since sophomore year. And Goose was – we were, like, cool with Goose early on, but the two guys in his class left, and he didn't really have, like, a – you kind of have, like, these little cliques of who you hang out with off the court, and he didn't have one. So after sophomore year, we took him in kind of under our wing, and then we moved in with him. And that's, like, when his – that's when he got his starting job, and that's when he, like – became the player of the year two times. So like I think we helped him just like find his, because he's from Lithuania and he hadn't loved this place yet. He hadn't found his home here yet, and he hadn't found like exactly what how he could help us on the court. Like he just hadn't become the player he is now. So since that, whatever, 2 years ago, like we've been inseparable, and it's been super cool just like becoming the senior leaders this year, and we've obviously had conversations about like where we want to take it, even going back to last year. Like before, we knew we were going to be captains this year, but like, so we're kind of plotting like how we want to run the thing and how it's going to look. And yeah, this year being like all the three top minutes getters on the team and being the leaders was pretty special, and it's helped our relationship grow off the court too. So it's been cool.
Super special, bro. Especially like y'all coming in, and it's constant improvement from all three of you guys. Like I was looking at Augustus' stats. You mentioned now he's in like player of the year contention and stuff every year, but like his first few years is averaging like three points a game. So yeah. It's crazy that you guys all kind of grew into, you know, some of the top players for St. Mary's. But stay with us while you take a quick break. We're back with Luke Barrett on the Not Even D2 pod. So, bro, last episode we was talking with this kid who plays at Davidson, and he had this, like, interesting concept. Basically, instead of NIL, where it still allows, like, you know, college basketball to be all over the place, the transfer portal all over the place, we should just do it to where if you commit to a school to play, like, basketball or whatever sport, you're signing contracts, so it's not NIL. So you're like kind of in that space. I know it's the WCC is still classified as a mid-major, but you know, you and Gonzaga are kind of like high major basketball programs. I was wondering just like your perspective on that, just because you're kind of in that space. What you think?
Yeah, I mean, do you mean like multi-year contract or
you get, so like if I transfer and I have 2 years left, like I'm signing a 2 year contract?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. No, I think like in a perfect world, I think that would be better, because like if they're, I mean, if you're trying to make it like pro, then yeah, like they're committing to you, got to commit to them. And yeah, I mean, anything that can like bring college basketball a little bit back to normalcy, I would love, because it's just like I saw it without NIL, and it was way more pure, and I liked it better like that. So I think that like something like that we should be trying to pursue that, because it's just like the end of the, especially like your like exit meetings, like you go out and it used to be like, all right, this is what we got to get you better at, like so what our plan is for the offseason. And now it's like the first thing is like, are you in or you out? Like that has to be the question every time now. So it's just kind of gross how it's operated like that. Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be tough to like, because there's certain like life like things, like maybe you just don't fit out of college or you're not happy there and you gotta leave. So that'd be tough, but and I'll be open to it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely just an ongoing conversation, just as, you know, on a year to year basis, how NIL is going to change, and just, you know, I'm sure they're going to add more, you know, barriers around it, and, you know, trying to figure out how to fix the situation. Cause like you said, it is crazy, bro. Like, you know, players entering March Madness, I mean, entering the portal during March Madness, like that's crazy, bro. Like yeah. You're not even locked in all the way onto your team or the ultimate goal, which is like to make a run in the tournament. So definitely weird time in Division I sports right now, bro. But one thing I wanted to ask you about, it's a little bit of a brighter note. So Adrian Wojnarowski, who's, you know, former ESPN journalist, like, you know, long time Woj bomb, all that stuff. He's now the GM of St. Bonaventure, which is a team in the A-10. And he recently went on a trip to Europe, like looking at prospects for his program. And one thing about St. Mary's, like, you guys have already kind of tapped into that, and you guys have six players coming from outside the U.S., one from Canada, like basically the other five coming from overseas. I think two Lithuania guys, and then three Australian players. So I'm just wondering, do you think you could see a trend of players from overseas come into like Division I schools, especially like maybe like mid majors or like some like the lower high majors, just to like get more opportunity, or no?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think we're already seeing it. I don't know what the numbers are, but like, since I've been here, there's way more guys, especially like in the WCC. We're going, like, I noticed that every time we put up that scout, like the guys, it's like half the team, at least of every team. It's like Lithuania, Germany, like France, like everybody. So, I mean, I think that game, obviously, we know the game's like growing over there, and you see it in the NBA, and it's growing everywhere. So, like, I don't see why it's not going to keep going over here. And usually the guys that come over, especially the ones I played with, like they're playing really good basketball. Like I think, I mean, I played AAU and everything, but like sometimes, especially what we're trying to play, like guys that never played AAU and they're just playing like good pro level basketball over there, they're playing smarter basketball and they're playing like they know how to play and they're talented. So I think it's going to keep going to where like every team's got a few at least, and some teams have like half of their guys are from somewhere else. Yeah.
Rude, I definitely think this is a trend, how you like specified mid-major, because I feel like at the high major level, it's more like they're getting the best guys and not like their coach isn't really implementing like structured offense or complicated plays, where in mid-major hoops, like when I was at the A-10 tourney, bro, it was like I'm watching the VCU coach against St. Bonaventure and it's like the most complex offenses just going at it. So the European style, I feel like, isn't like they can obviously play at the highest level, but I don't think it's necessarily built for high major basketball. So I think I could definitely see it more implemented into like mid major hoops. But bro, I was curious, you mentioned like briefly just scouting. I was curious, what's like a scouting session at St. Mary's? Like, what do y'all focus on? Stuff like that.
Yeah, I could take you through like what we do for one game. Like we, like in league, if it's, we have a Saturday game, on Friday, we would on Friday practice on the day before the game, we would go in the film room, and one of the assistants would have like just all the guys' names up there, and you would have like what direction they like to drive. You basically say like no right, no threes, or no open threes, or no wide open threes. Like box this guy out, nothing easy, no drop offs, like just like everything that they're trying to do, basically like what they're trying to do on offense. Like you say, like maybe they're playing, this guy plays seals or this guy does this, but yeah, it's just like all their tendencies of all the guys that play, and then their stats, and then coaches putting up the keys to the game, and like, which are usually pretty much the same. It's just like take care of the ball, no trans, no threes, like contain penetration, whatever, like smash the boards, like just all those things. And we're putting those up the day before the game and kind of just marking their shooters and marking who our matchups are going to be. And then we only watch like 20 minutes of film. It's just like their sets and what they try to get to, and then personnel film, six or seven clips of each of the guys. And then in practice that day, we'll go over like their on balls that they run, we'll guard those, or if they're running like zoom action or Spain or whatever, like we'll go over kind of what they get to, and then do about like 30 minutes after practice of just running through their sets with the scout team. And then day of the game, we do like 45 minutes of, we go over the personnel again, and then we do 45 minutes of guarding on court of like their sets. So I don't know if that's like lengthy or not lengthy, but it's pretty thorough, where like yet at the end of the day, you know, you just say a number, and I know like what they do, what direction they go, how good of a shooter they are, what plays are run to them. So you get a pretty good like feel. Like I feel like we're the more prepared team. We know like maybe one time a game they're gonna throw a play out that we've never seen, and they're like, what's that? Like they're throwing one thing out, but everything else, like you either know it or your coaches like know the play call. Like they're listening on the telecast. Like the GAs will listen to like six games and try to just get like a play call of the coach. And they know if this guy says like speed, then you know like what that play is. So it's pretty thorough.
Yeah, bro. I've seen online, like I know someone that was breaking down film for Kansas State, and he was breaking down like all the ATOs and like sideline out of bounds and stuff like that, and baseline out of bounds, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
And bro, the scout that he made for like Kansas State was crazy, bro. Like it was a bunch of different plays throughout their whole year of like other teams, what they like to run. Like, so the scouting process at the Division I level is just so intense, I feel like.
I mean, sometimes he'll be like, yeah, we haven't seen this all year, but like they ran it against us last year, so we're going to put this out too. Like we only see this once in like 12 games, but like they could get to it. Like, bro, come on. Like, they got to toe that line of like they watch like five or six games of this team, so like they got to be careful not to put too much out there, but they put a good amount of stuff.
Word. I mean, yeah, just trying to get you as prepared as possible. I got one more question for you, bro, before we end it. So your junior and senior year, like you took a jump like statistically in all categories pretty much. So I'm just wondering, what did the summer look like development wise for you? Like, what were you working on? What was the coaching staff kind of telling you to work on? I know in Division I, you guys going for the summers too, so they're with you a lot, but just kind of walk us through your development plan after both of those summers.
That's always like trying to become a better 3-point shooter. Especially like the shots I'm getting is a lot of just threes. So I took jumps both years, like both off seasons and that. I don't think it reflected in my percentage this year, which was something I wish I would have done, but I took jumps and became a better shooter. And then you're trying to expand your game like a little bit offensively, but like I knew I wasn't going to be like over dribbling that much or doing too much on offense. So it's mainly, especially this year, it was mainly like conditioning and just knowing I was going to play. I didn't know I was going to play 40 minutes a game, but like I knew I was going to play a lot more, and just trying to get in good enough shape that I could play as hard as I want to play like the entire game. But yeah, I mean, it's not like when you get, I don't know, for me, when I've been here for so long that like I didn't have to take any more like huge like jumps of like adding this to your game. Like they're not going to throw it into me in the post like all the time, but like you're still working on everything. but just trying to make like those small jumps.
I got you. Yeah, I definitely can understand that. I mean, they're just kind of, you know, you're just adding to your own game and seeing where you kind of fit in at that point.
Yeah.
So definitely good to see, bro. And, you know, like we've talked about, you've had a great career, bro. Honestly, a great story. So it's been awesome, like, learning your story, bro, having you on the podcast. And I'm glad the viewers get to, like, learn a little bit about you. And like I said, great career. So, you know, KJ and I are just wondering, what's next for Luke Barrett?
I want to keep this going as long as I can. So I'm going to try to go play out in Europe or somewhere like that. In the works of getting an agent right now. And then hopefully start talking to some teams. And that's what a lot of the guys in my spot who came before me, they go play somewhere. Team is playing in Germany or Italy or places like that. So I think that's in the cards for me. And just kind of, yeah, try to keep hooping as long as I can.
Yo, bro, later today you said you're about to get your first workout in a few weeks. So you got to let me know how that workout go later.
Yeah, bro, I will. We'll see.
But we got in this episode with a rapid fire starting 5 edition. So let us know when you're ready for rapid fire.
Yes, sir.
All right, so first rapid fire question. You were telling us before the episode that, you know, could we mention that you rap and stuff like that on this, right? Just to make sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so you said that you're a rapper, you'd be doing it on the side. So who are some of your musical inspirations, bro?
Definitely number one right now is Kendrick. Cudi, early on in my college career, I was listening to a lot of Kid Cudi. So I kind of like to, like, have a little bit of that melody and the hums and stuff like that. But I like to I like to listen to all rap, but I've really tried to, like, listen to more of a broad horizon of things. I like to listen to a lot of like 70s music. My dad loves like 70s music, so listen to a lot of like Grateful Dead right now, Beatles, and like I even love like Billie Eilish, like Adele, and just like everything. So I'm kind of trying to be a student of music. Not that I'm like trying to be like a musician in my career or like a rapper, but like it's fun for me to just like really like know it better and like learn about it.
I mean, it's only gonna get you better, bro. So that's definitely cool to hear that you're, you know, trying to, you know, see what else is out there and trying to, you know, branch out. But the next rapid fire question I got for you, bro, what was your favorite arena that you played in, you know, throughout your 4 years? You can name a couple if you want.
Oh, man. I mean, number one is the home floor, obviously, but because it's a very like unique, small, like looks like a high school gym, but it gets, yeah, gets rowdy in there, and you just feel it. You feel the love in there. But
bro, those Gonzaga games look crazy. Yeah, at St. Mary's.
Bro, the floor is like actually like wet. Like it gets like dangerously like wet because it's so like everybody's been in there for so long and it's so packed that. Like, I never sweat, and I don't even sweat that much in games. I never sweat in warmups, and I got to the end of warmups. I'm like, why am I, like, dripping sweat right now? I'm like, oh, this Gonzaga game. I forgot about that. Like, every spot on the floor. Like, there was one year where they complained about it after the game. They, like, didn't really think about it. But I would say BYU used to be at our conference, and that was the first game I actually, like, played meaningful minutes in. I just got tossed in there, like, in the second half, and I was like, holy shit. Like, looking up, it's just, like, one of those, like, super steep gyms where – And all those fans are so crazy about it. Quicken Loans this year was cool. It was like one of those where you really like can tell you're in a March Madness game with all the lights and how many people are in there. Those would be three that come to mind.
Word. Next rapid fire question. Name two or three of your funniest teammates that you've had throughout your career at St. Mary's.
First one comes to mind early on was Dan Fotu. He's from New Zealand. He's one of those guys with the sleeve tats and like just like Islander, and he's just like, it's hilarious, bro. And just like, he's the one that you want to go out and party with, and but he's a jokester too. And then some of them guys like this guy from Estonia, Lemon Bachler, was just not – he wasn't trying to be funny, but he's just hilarious. Like, the way he, like – the way his accent and the way – the stuff – because they kind of broken English. Like, Paulus Morauskas is here. He's from Lithuania, and he just, like, says the funniest shit without even trying to be funny. So, I'd say Alex Dukas from Australia. He was traditionally funny. He was just a very, very funny guy to be around.
No, that's a fact. The foreign presence.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely, like, they usually are just comedy around our culture for some reason. But yeah. We're going to end this episode with a starting five edition. And we was talking off air, bro. This might be the craziest edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup, point guard through center, who's your lineup going to be? And this edition is going to be WCC players. And you asked me, like, should you do it when you were actually getting minutes or throughout your whole career? And I'm going to say, like, whatever you want to do. So it could be throughout your career or, like, through the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Just tell me where they played at.
Yeah. Yeah, man, the one stuff. I'm going to give – it could be Jalen Suggs for sure, but Andrew Nembhard – was different. Like, he and I think I played when one game again. I don't it's hard to, there's the years mixed together, but he was there a little longer than Suggs. He was just like, he played so smooth and controlled the game, and he's obviously on the Pacers now and he's doing well. And I'm gonna give a shout out to a non-NBA guy, but Cam Shelton from LMU. He was like, he killed us, and he actually beat us 1 year that, like, we should not have lost. We never really used, like, try to lose those mid-level or bottom-level teams in our conference, but he, like, dropped 30-something on us, and, like, I remember being at the end of that game, and they were just bringing my guy up to, like, to set a vert with him, and then I'd have to, like, either show up or, like, switch on Cam Shelton, and they're just like, you know, I'm like, damn, I'm getting hunted right now, like, but he was just, like, a fucking pit bull, man. He was a dog, and he went and beat Gonzaga on the road that year, too, so he'd have to make that cut. This is the easiest one, is J-Dub.
Yeah, that boy.
I mean, he was, like, out of nowhere, but, like, you could tell right away. We put our best defender on him, and he was just cooking. Like, he almost bounced us out of the conference tournament. He, like, back-rimmed a game winner on us. But, like, he was carrying that team, man. Like, he was ridiculous. And it just, like, looked like a pro, you know?
Yeah, low-key, I'm surprised you said that's the easiest one, though. But keep going.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the easiest one is Timmy. I'll put Timmy at the five, because the type of, like, scout you had to put against him on him was, like, so crazy. Like, we were so detailed. Like, when he makes this move, we're doubling. When he makes this move, we're just something. Like, it was just like, you got to be in his lap and you got to try to take him away. He was crazy. And then at the four, I don't want to take the easy route and go Chet. And
I was
going to
say.
My guy, Kyle Bone, locked up. Chet had, like, 7 points on us and, like, I don't know, maybe, like, 10 the other game. So, like, maybe I'm just a hater, bro. But, like, let me go Eli Scott, bro.
Eli Scott.
LMU.
He played at LMU. He wasn't, like, as, like, efficient maybe as other guys, but, like, you would just look up and he'd have, like, 25 points and, like, 10 rebounds, because he's just, like, relentlessly just, like, physical, and he's always going to get a deep catch in there. So he was tough.
Nah, that's a tough starting five, bro. He definitely played against some good comp, but I'm not jacking that if Chet's not even in the lineup, bro.
Let it go, bro.
But that's going to do it for another episode of Not Even D2, bro. Appreciate you getting on. I hope that workout goes smooth later, and appreciate you getting on, bro.
I appreciate y'all. Let me know what y'all think of them tracks.
Heard you.
Got you.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2.
Make sure you subscribe. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Twitter. That's the best way to support the channel.
And all episodes released on iHeartRadio, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. That's going to do it. And we'll see you next week on Thursday.
Yo, bro, that was a fire episode.
OD.